And she wants to get rid of any psychological approaches to illness. But she's not dealing with the fact that there is meaning to illness, which is not necessarily moralistic. But she has a forceful argument. She says illness is not a metaphor, and that illness is resistant to metaphoric thinking. And she complains bitterly about psychological explanations for diseases. She thinks that psychological approaches undermine the reality of disease and seem to blame the victim. And she wants to focus purely on the physical aspects of illness. So the problem here is that she's misunderstanding the relationship between physical illness and the psychology of the sufferer. It's a mistake to say the mind causes the disease in the body. That was the old psychosomatic view, which is no longer useful. For one thing, it treats mind and body as if they were different entities, which we now think is a mistake. As I showed at the beginning, the psychological situation and the physical situation express the same problem in different ways. The psychological problem doesn't cause the physical problem. They correlate with each other, if you like. And we need metaphors to talk about our illnesses. We need metaphors to tell our stories about our illnesses. And we need metaphor and symbol to express our feelings about illnesses. Now, it's true that if you get too New Agey and start talking about the psychological components of the illness too much, you overburden the sick person, and that is a mistake. But she takes the extreme position that illness has no meaning. It's a biological process with no psychological background. But I've tried to show that that's not true at all. Illness has important meaning. It's an important opportunity to examine one's life and to stop taking life for granted. And let me go back to the problem of psychological difficulty here. So let's consider the problem of depression, which the DSM unfortunately regards as a disorder. Suppose I see a person who's in a job that she hates and in a marriage that's bad for her. She's depressed. She's given a depression rating scale. She clearly scores in the depressive range. And she's told that she has a chemical imbalance in her brain. Then the doctor can avoid paying much attention to her life situation, and she can avoid looking at it because all she has is a chemical imbalance. Then she's submitted to an ideological commitment about the cause of depression, and she goes along with the approach that the insurance company and the drug companies would prefer. Then the doctor has used his or her clinical and cultural authority to tell her what's wrong with her. She takes an antidepressant and she's better in a few weeks, but she's still in a job she hates. She's still in a marriage that's bad for her. So the question is, has she really been helped? On paper, and according to the DSM and the insurance company, she has been helped. But all that's happened is that now she can tolerate her life situation because her emotional pain is not so intolerable. There are many sensitive people on antidepressants who know that the medication is giving them some distance from their emotions so they can tolerate their depression. It doesn't make it go away. Now, from an evidence point of view, I've helped her if I do all this, and this is one of the enormous weaknesses in this so-called evidence-based practice. She has symptomatic improvement, and maybe she has the strength to deal with her life, but I've privileged her brain chemistry. This is an ideology that I've imposed on her. I'm ignoring the larger context of her life. And I have to, in order to stress the primacy of her brain chemistry, I have to ignore the rest of her lived experience. And from the Jungian point of view, I've ignored the message from the self that something needs attention in her life.